For half a century, something's been killing countless leopard sharks in San Francisco Bay. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife has described the massive die-off as a 50-year-old murder mystery, something worthy of Agatha Christie. And it's easy to draw comparisons between the shark's case and a crime novel. Producer Francesca Fenzi brings us this tale of underwater intrigue. But to begin, we have to start this case above water, at a baseball game.
Meanwhile, out in the cove, sharks are getting hungry.
There was a Giants game going on, and in McCovey Cove, the camera guys got footage of a leopard shark.
I don't think he's had too much to drink. He's going in circles.
And he was swimming erratically in the water, and it was really fun, happy-go-lucky commentary.
I think he's looking for baseballs that kind of went into the cove during batting practice.
I looked out on the screen, and I was like, actually, what's happening is that shark is one of the victims of this outbreak.
This is Josh.
Joshua Porter, so I'm the resource analyst of aquatic exhibits here at East Bay Park District.
He's a fish biologist. And when he saw the shark swimming outside the Giants ballpark, he didn't see it as a funny animal encounter. He saw it as something sinister.
It's what they call an epizootic event, which is generally a large-scale die-off of one type of animal, all caused by the same thing.
In other words, that shark was dying. And Josh knew all the telltale signs, because he was in hot pursuit of the killer. For roughly 50 years, something has been killing leopard sharks in San Francisco Bay. The sharks and some other species were falling prey to an unknown pathogen, dying by the thousands. And this year's die-off was one of the worst.
We do have estimates, like I said, of about 1,000 leopard sharks or more. We have pretty loose estimates, hundreds of bat rays, and much lesser numbers of some of the other species we see in the bay. Brown smoothhound sharks, seven gill sharks, shovel nose guitar fish, which is related to stingrays, thornback rays. It's definitely affected a wide range of fish, but none as much as the leopard shark.
Is that kind of scary from a preservation perspective?
Yeah, it's incredibly scary.
Josh says it wasn't just the number of species infected, but what the diagnosis meant for an infected animal. This disease was untreatable and incurable. It was a death sentence.
With the dying animals, what we're seeing is sort of this erratic, almost confused swimming pattern. Head out of the water, almost you could picture like a dolphin kind of sticking its head out of the water. And that behavior that we're describing to the pathologist when we pass on the specimen, that's sort of triggering things like that appears to be neurological. Like something is wrong in that area.
The infection was hitting their brains. Josh compares it to like meningitis in humans. And this kicked off a mystery because meningitis comes from somewhere. Something is causing that infection. Josh compared it to a crime scene. If meningitis is the murder weapon, you still have to figure out who used that weapon. You're looking for a suspect. So Josh and a bunch of other researchers set out to find one.
My name's Hannah. I'm a graduate student at the University of California, San Francisco.
I'm Sean Ron Van Someren. I'm the executive director and founder of the Pelagic Shark Research Foundation.
Then, of course, there's also Mark Okahiro. He's the San Diego-based fish and wildlife pathologist who's been working on this project. I think of him as like the lone wolf detective from a murder mystery. He couldn't even speak to me about this project for reasons that I won't get into, but his name came up a lot. Josh works with him too.
As a matter of fact, this is, yeah, that's his California Department of Fish and Wildlife. This is just what we send all the dead sharks to.
It's a cooler.
It's just a cooler. And there's a bunch of ice packs in our freezer. And so if and when we find stuff, we literally have to cut the head off of the animal, put that in a bag, put some ice packs on it, and ship an ice chest overnight to San Diego. So my end is a little less scientific.
That's where Hannah enters the picture.
Hannah Ritalik, like Metallica of the band.
Hannah's a graduate student at the University of California, San Francisco, where she works with the DeRisi Pathology Lab. She's definitely a scientist. I think of her like the team's crime scene investigator.
I get excited about all kinds of things. In the last year, we've looked at sharks, we looked at frogs, we looked at rabbits. Just one of the things we do in the DeRisi Lab is look for infectious disease.
For Hannah, the leopard shark mystery felt like discovering a cold case buried in her own backyard.
You know, I think I was excited to take a look at something new. We didn't know what we would find. And it was right there happening right next door. The animals were washing up on the beach right next to us.
So she took vials of the shark's spinal fluid and started looking for a culprit. She used DNA sequencing to identify organisms in the brain that didn't belong. And pretty soon, the data started to point to one organism in particular. She sent her findings back to Mark, and he went through dozens of slides looking for evidence of the invader.
So these are, like, pictures of the shark's
brains? Yeah, so these are, you know, slides. Let's see. We have this thing, this thing. This is our killer right here we're looking at.
It's like a microscopic, slightly rounder cell than the other things.
This is causing all the problems.
Just like any good detective story, there were a lot of false leads. Initially, the researchers thought it might be a fungal infection or a bacteria. But eventually, the detective unmasked his killer, a protozoan pathogen with a tricky name.
Call him Miami for short, but...
My working theory is Miamiensis.
Miamiensis avidus. And this thing is tiny. I had trouble seeing it, even on the slides.
Yeah, it's like the size of a pin head on your computer.
Yeah, it looks like he's like searching for a needle in a needle stack.
But hunting for a microscopic villain wasn't the only challenge. They also had to look at the big picture. How are animals contracting this pathogen? During the past decade, scientists have started to notice patterns. For example, the die-offs always began in the spring, and wet winters usually meant a deadlier year. There are a couple of schools of thought about why these factors might make things worse. But here's what researchers agree on. Spring is mating season for leopard sharks, so they're often coming together in bigger numbers and hanging out in shallower water. Mix that with high amounts of rainwater, and you get a couple of things. Lower salinity or salt in the bay, because there's lots of fresh water coming in, and more contaminants from the human population washed through the storm drains. This dip in water quality sounds, to one researcher, like a really common sense explanation.
It's not a mystery. It's just not. You know, they're finding, you know, necrotizing protozoas and, you know, fungal inclusions. And all. It's all basic water quality artifacts. That's all that is.
This is Sean with the Pelagic Shark Research Foundation. And side note, leopard sharks aren't pelagic sharks. Those are the big deep water species like great whites. But Sean's been tracking leopard sharks for decades. He says he just likes them.
Leopard sharks are it's like one of the nicest sharks you're going to meet, right? They're not going to bite anybody or, you know, overturn a boat or anything like this. They were once far more abundant, far larger individually. They were living longer. And the estuaries that they're linked to have been, you know, diminished, or I would just say destroyed.
This is kind of Sean's big thing. The leopard shark's habitat is gone. San Mateo, Alameda, Berkeley, sections of Oakland, Richmond, San Francisco, they're all built on top of what used to be tidal estuaries. And Sean thinks that's influencing the shark's deaths.
The whole stranding die-off issue is an artifact of former tidal marine estuaries becoming these basic, you know, death traps to wildlife that historically and naturally had always gone in there.
His theory is this. Leopard sharks enter the shallow waters every year to spawn, but the shorelines changed, and some inland waters were reshaped by man-made tidal gates. And those can be deadly. If the sharks swim in when the gates are open, they get trapped in brackish water when the gates close.
They didn't get the memo that, you know, that it's now a stormwater basin. You know, the tidal estuarine lagoon is now a stormwater, you know, basin, and those tidal creeks and canals are now culverts.
Sean points out that the leopard sharks are pretty resilient. He doesn't buy into the idea that fresh water is killing them. But he does think they get sick when they can't leave a toxic environment like the storm basins. They get stuck in low saline water with a bunch of contaminants, and they die. And then when the tide gates open again, there's a mess.
Like a terrestrial analogy is like, you know, a bunch of roadkill piled up, you know, from the highway. A 10-mile stretch stuck all in one stack. And it's just buzzing with flies, right? So underwater, imagine a big stack of dead bat rays and leopard sharks. They have flies. It's protozoas and stuff like that. The protozoas, the bacterial fungal inclusions, and all the other stuff that causes internal lesions, infections, flourish in the presence of these accumulated dead carcasses.
Sean's theory is pretty difficult to test. Frankly, there just isn't enough data. But he brings up a really important point. Now that we've figured out what's killing the sharks, is there anything we can do about it? Sean says education's a good place to start, because sharks, they've got a PR problem.
the tradition is they had a bad reputation anyway. Our perception of sharks was they were an ingredient in some larger disaster. There's never a good time for them. They always showed up when you least needed them.
And while series like the Discovery Channel's Shark Week have helped, Sean says sharks either get portrayed as monsters or the distant subject of a nature documentary. And the leopard sharks in San Francisco, they don't really fit either of those descriptions. Sean thinks of them more like the state fish.
They're a signature species for California. So they're like the poppy, the grizzly bear, you know. They're a symbol. They're a historic symbol.
Josh has a different take.
Depending on the numbers you're losing, it can have a pretty devastating effect on the overall ecosystem of the bay because the leopard sharks are one of the apex predators of the bay.
He says leopard sharks, like any predator, keep other species in check. And there's no way of knowing what happens to the ecosystem if sharks disappear entirely. Josh and some of the other people I spoke to said this year was a big step forward in identifying the killer. But they also agreed, we need more information before we'll really be able to stop it. So as San Francisco Bay heads into winter, the wet, rainy season linked to all of these outbreaks, researchers have a message. And it sounds a lot like your typical crime PSA. What we really need now is information. So if you see something, say something. The Bay signature shark might depend on it.